We have to execute better. We have to be more consistent. You know, like most game tapes, win or lose, there's good and bad. You know, we have plays out in the left out there. We've got to play better. You know, I'm sure fans are upset. I can promise you we're upset. Fans should be. I know we are. We have to be more consistent, and we have to be better and play better.
Previously on Serial. Whoops, wrong podcast. This is the DenverBroncos.com podcast, week 12. Thanks for joining us from the website or subscribing on iTunes. It's been a really busy week, especially with Champ Bailey's retirement. He made his way back to Dove Valley to sign his one-day contract and hold a press conference. Just a really cool scene. You can find all the videos and articles and photo galleries from him coming back on our website at DenverBroncos.com, naturally. And also on that day, I went out to Shriver Air Force Base with Cody Latimer, Benny Fowler, Isaiah Burse, Ben Garland. Some of the cheerleaders, our president and CEO, Joe Ellis. We all made our way out there to the Air Force Base to not only meet some of the men and women who are serving in our military, but also learn about what they are doing there. And it was really neat. I'm not sure what I expected, but to go into a restricted area is something I never really expected I'd get to do. And so to see that was just really cool. They handle all the GPS satellites that, you know, we use every day. And to see them operating those and all that they have to do is kind of just mind-blowing. They told us so much stuff, and I still don't really understand much of it at all. So that's why I am here talking to you on a podcast and not operating satellites up in space. But especially to see Ben Garland go back and connect with all these people who saw him play in college and, you know, as an Air Force graduate and as a member of the Air Force right now, just really neat to see them connect with him. And we also had some roster moves this week, all on the practice squad. Zach Thompson and Douglas McNeil were both released, and Josh Bush and Mark Asper were added. And as far as injuries go, there hasn't been a lot of changes in the past couple days, but there are definitely some big injuries that were suffered in that St. Louis game that we have to update. Monte Ball, Emmanuel Sanders, and Julius Thomas all got hurt in that game, have yet to practice this week. As of Thursday, Monte Ball re-injured that groin that he had an issue with earlier this season, has not participated yet this week. Like I said, Emmanuel Sanders is going through that concussion protocol. As he's going through that, he has been cleared to go through some conditioning work, but has yet to be able to practice with the team. And Julius Thomas has the ankle injury, suffered it early in the game, and he has yet to come back from that. So those three are definitely some of the bigger injuries that we have to look at going into this week. Ronnie Hillman hasn't practiced with his foot injury. Britton Colquitt has an illness, was kept out of practice on Thursday. Hopefully he'll be better for Sunday, you would think so. And there's plenty of other injuries to go through, but if I went through all of them, it would take up a lot of time in this podcast. But mostly there's some bumps and bruises, some limited practice guys who are probably going to play this weekend. We'll get more on that on Friday when we hear the practice report as well as the game status updates for the weekend. Now looking at the games around the league from this past week, naturally we're going to talk about the NFC South and the AFC North because those are the two divisions that are just a revolving door for teams. In the AFC North, we had Cleveland on top last week. Fast forward to this week, they are now at the bottom. You know, one game can swing it. Cincinnati is back at the top after a win over the Saints. But naturally, you shouldn't count out any of those other teams as they're all above 500 and all right in the mess of that race there for that division. Then in the NFC South, you have everyone below 500. And now it's the Falcons' turn on top. Last week it was the Saints, week before that it was the Panthers. I don't know, maybe you can't count out that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers can win a few in a row and get atop the division themselves. As far as teams atop the conference, New England took a full game over everyone else with a win over Indianapolis. Just a really convincing win on the ground, through the air, on defense, holding Indianapolis to only 20 points. They've really established themselves as the top team in probably the whole league right now. But I have to hesitate. I can't just crown New England just yet because we still have Arizona in the NFC who only has one loss still this season. They beat Detroit, who was 7-2 previously, in a close game, 14-6. Neither team scored in the second half, kind of a defensive battle. After Carson Palmer tore his ACL last week, Cardinals head coach Bruce Arians did say that he's very confident that Drew Stanton can be their Super Bowl quarterback. This week he was solid. I mean, he passed for 306 yards, a couple touchdowns, but he did have a couple picks. Still, winning that game against one of the top teams in the league is very impressive that they can still do that with their backup quarterback. And going forward, it seems that they can still be very, very competitive without Carson Palmer and with Drew Stanton instead. And then looking ahead to this week, we've got a couple great, great matchups. The Lions taking on New England, that'll be very big. That could be a very important game for either teams, both in their conference and divisional races. And then you look at Arizona facing Seattle in a divisional matchup. That should be a really good one. Seattle fighting to stay in that wild card race, and Arizona on top trying to keep that first round bye on their plate. It seems like every divisional race is still far from being outside of the realm of doubt. The only two teams that could really run away with it is Arizona and New England, and both of them have tough games that could be big in their divisional races as well. And now let's take a trip back to this past Sunday and take a look at what happened in the Broncos 22-7 loss to the Rams in St. Louis.
It's never good to lose guys, but you know, the bottom line is we got to play better on offense. I mean, I get in there, I feel ready to go, you know, ready to go make plays, and you know, we've got guys, you know, across the board that feel that way, and you know, we just did too many things that, you know, we shot ourselves in the foot a couple times, and you know, we didn't convert some third downs that would have really helped. We never could get it clicking, and we got to correct that. I don't think concerned is the right word. I think, you know, frustrated. Obviously, you know, you got to give them a lot of credit. They outplayed us, but I think we're frustrated. I know offensively, I'm frustrated. You know, we have to play better, and I think we just got to go back to the drawing board, stick together, and get better. You know we have a team good enough to do some really good things this year and get to the end goal we want to get to, but we got to play better than we did today.
It was a tough game to watch. The Broncos lost 22-7, and I imagine it was a tough game to play in. You know, this team is not unfamiliar with slow starts, but this one ended up being not only a slow start, but a slow middle and a slow end for the offense especially.
Well, the Rams had a tendency of starting fast and fading, except against Philadelphia when they did the reverse. So the fact that they got out to a 10-0 lead in the first quarter and 13-0 lead in the second quarter, that wasn't a surprise. And really, as you know, as we were sitting there watching the game, you were thinking, okay, they're off to, you know, they've done this before. The Broncos are going to be able to come back. But, you know, there were a few mitigating factors. Obviously, the loss of Julius Thomas to an ankle injury in the first quarter, and then the loss of Emmanuel Sanders to a concussion in the third. That had an impact. But also, you know, the Rams are playing better, and certainly, you know, Sean Hill stabilized the quarterback position for them. And I think a big key for them as far as keeping the Broncos off balance was the fact that they were able to get some deep shots early. And we've seen the Broncos offense have success when it got some deep balls early in games as far as kind of forcing a defense to play back and concede the underneath stuff. Well, the Rams kind of did that to the Broncos with the 33 and 63-yard passes in the first quarter, and that really kept Denver off balance from that point forward, I thought.
Yeah, and plus the Broncos just couldn't keep the chains moving. You look at the Raiders win the other week, they let the Raiders stay in it because they threw a couple turnovers early, and that gave the Raiders the chance to have some short fields, score quickly. But in this one, the turnover was turning the ball over on downs once they couldn't get that third down, fourth down conversion early on in the game. I mean, they were in Rams territory, but that kind of, you know, set them up with some positive field position, and right after that you have the 63-yard touchdown. They also didn't get the run game going. The offense just couldn't move. They didn't get in the red zone once all day.
Not only did not get in the red zone, they didn't get any closer than the 28-yard line of St. Louis. And really, when can you recall a game like that where that was the closest snap they had to the line of scrimmage? I mean, that just doesn't happen, especially not to this offense. And pretty remarkable to rack up close to 400 yards for the offense and not get any closer than the St. Louis 28. Just, you know, you talked about the run game. You know, it wasn't working all that well, but you've got to hand the ball to your running backs more than nine times in a game. I mean, no team has had a greater run-pass imbalance in a game this season than the Broncos, only running on 15% of their snaps against the Rams, and they haven't had that low an overall run tally, you know, in over 30 years. So they've got that's something that they've got to work on, and you know, sometimes it's as simple as saying, okay, yeah, maybe the defense is best aligned to pass, but let's try to run here, because A, you want to create offensive balance, and B, to go back to an earlier point, you know, when the Broncos, you know, were able to get some deep shots early in games earlier this season, they were using the play action, and without the run, the play action is just useless.
And talking about an amazing statistic, I went back and looked at this last night. The last time the Broncos have gone scoreless in the entire second half, I think it was like in 2009. You had Kyle Orton playing, and they even went to Chris Sims throwing about 13 passing attempts.
Yeah, because Orton got hurt at halftime of that, or just before halftime of that game. Actually, the funny thing is, as I got into the fourth quarter, I just went back and looked that up, because you could kind of see the way the game was going, and that a shutout in the second half was a possibility. So I tweeted that out. And the other thing that's remarkable about the offensive performance is, it's the lowest regular season point total since the last regular season start for Tim Tebow, which was on January 1st, 2012. The Broncos got 3 points, but those three were in the second half. So just some remarkable numbers on the negative side for this Broncos offense. I mean, really, you knew the Rams' defense was tough. You knew that their pass rush was going to cause some problems. And
just uncharacteristic.
Uncharacteristic, but also endemic of some of the issues that the offense has. I mean, you know, you go back to the fourth down sack in the fourth quarter that kind of effectively seemed to end the Broncos' hopes of winning for the most part. And it was Robert Quinn stunting and coming through the A gap and setting Aaron Donald up for a snap for the sack. And you know, Quinn, one of the best pass rushers in football, a guy that you've always got to keep your eyes on, goes through the A gap unblocked. And you know, we've seen that so many times this year, where you know, guys coming through the A gap. You've seen other instances where you had three man rushes and you did a stunt and the guy came through the A gap and made a play. You know, unfortunately for the Broncos, plays like that have happened before, and that's kind of the sign of an alarming trend.
Something that they said after the game is that they give the Rams a lot of credit, but going into that game, the Rams were pretty middling. Their defensive stats were in the middle of the road. Pass rush has gotten it going late, and I think they kind of took advantage as the Broncos try and figure out their offensive line. But how much do you credit the Rams in that game?
You give them some credit. Remember, they're middling, but they were trending upward, especially in the last few weeks. You look at their game against Arizona a week earlier. They gave up 31 points, yes, but most of them were off of turnovers, either direct scores or short fields. So, now the Rams have been getting it done defensively for a few weeks. Ever since the Seattle game, they've really started to put things together on that side of the ball. That's when their pass rush, which had gotten pressure but really only one sack in the first five games, that was when their pass rush started to turn the corner and convert that pressure into sacks. So, you know, on the one hand, you caught the Rams at a bad time, but on the other hand, some of the things that we've discussed that have been issues with the Broncos, you know, reared their ugly head again on Sunday.
Plus, it doesn't help to have so many injuries to key players. I mean, you talk about Emmanuel Sanders. For a while, he was the only one getting those first downs in the first few drives, and he had, a great first half. He was the only touchdown of the game coming in the second quarter, and then, you know, you get first couple plays in the third, and he's out with a concussion.
And he and Julius Thomas are responsible for more than half of the offensive touchdowns so far this year. And, you know, I mean, obviously, you'll hear around Broncos headquarters, next man up, and that's what you've got to say. But you do lose something when you lose those two, and especially when, in the case of at tight end, you didn't have Virgil Green because he missed the third consecutive game with a calf injury. So you were down to one tight end. That restricted the kind of things you could do formationally, because Jacob Tammy while a good receiving tight end, you know, he's more of a guy that you, you know, line up in the slot rather than play a traditional tight end. It really kind of restricted the Broncos, you know, play calling and formational flexibility.
It was kind of interesting to see Tammy out there, you know, playing his wide receiver position that he played a lot in college. He kind of transitioned to tight end into the pros, but seeing him on the wideout is kind of, you know, it was tough watching them try and go to him so often against that secondary.
Well, I mean, I think the interesting thing was how often he was split wide, and you know, and to Tammy's credit, he doesn't need separation to make a catch. You know, when he, we've seen this when he's been in games the last 3 years, that a defender can be all over him, and if the pass is placed right, he's going to make the play. But you know, when he was running some go routes and the ball was just a little bit too far, the timing just was off. Kind of endemic of the entire team. It just seemed like the timing of the entire operation in St. Louis was just a bit off, and that led to arguably the worst Broncos regular season game of the last 3 years.
It's definitely been a little bit of a tough stretch last three games on the road, losing two of those three, the first being, of course, against the Patriots up in New England. The Broncos will try and get things back on track, coming back at home, playing the Dolphins this Sunday. Before we get to that, though, let's head over to our AFC West rundown, as the Broncos are now tied, but they have the tiebreaker with the Chiefs, who have won five straight. So the AFC West got a little bit more muddied. Denver, once atop, is still atop the division, but now they're tied with the Chiefs, all sitting at 7-3. The Chargers aren't far behind, but it's really the Chiefs who have had a great run lately. They got their fifth straight win, and in impressive fashion, beating the Seahawks at home in Kansas City, in a 24-20 win. And really, they kind of didn't do it in the fashion that we're used to. You know, we're used to them running the ball, grinding the clock, and just kind of dominating games on the ground. And while they did run the ball very well, they had a lot of first downs. They didn't really need to go 5 yards at a time and extend drives. They just scored very well. They're really good in the red zone. Yeah, they converted for touchdowns in the red zone 3 out of 4 times. And it's not like Seattle didn't have a chance. They had a lot of chances in the fourth quarter. They had a long drive towards the middle of the fourth. They got all the way down the 2-yard line and then just couldn't get in the end zone. They turned the ball over on downs. The Chiefs picked up from there. They couldn't get anything going. They had to punt from the back of their own end zone. And it still didn't matter. Seahawks had the ball on Kansas City's 36, 4th and 1. Marshawn Lynch got stopped, and that was pretty much the game. I mean, there were a few minutes left, but once they got the ball back, they were deep, deep in their territory. They got a little bit out of there, but they only got to their own 20-yard line after a sack, and, you know, a long pass attempt later, they turned the ball over again, and the Chiefs ran out the clock. For a fifth straight win, this is about as strong as you can get against the defending Super Bowl champs. So the Chiefs have looked really good as of late, and they've definitely given the Broncos a run for their money atop the division. That game coming up in a few weeks will definitely be important. Elsewhere, we had a divisional matchup between the Raiders and the Chargers. Raiders sitting at 0-9 before this game, and they would sit at 0-10 after it. This was the second time they faced off. The first time was a really close game. I think the final score was 31-28. Raiders tried to come back, and they just couldn't get it done. Threw a pick at the end, turned the ball over, and that was that. Really exciting finish, but was it that way in this one too, David?
No, pretty much the opposite, Ben. Lauren and I watched this game, and we were kind of just laughing at how sloppy the game was. It was a slog. Like you said, 31-28 was the last game. Lots of big offensive plays. It's exciting. Both teams had a lot of energy in that game. This game was really the opposite. It ended 13-6. Both teams, again, struggled. Very sloppy play. We had 18 punts, the most in any NFL game this year. There were also lots of penalties. Teams went combined 7 for 30 on third down. So pretty sloppy. Obviously, the Chargers had some of that as well, but let's start with the Raiders. They had a lot of the sloppiness to show for.
You know, that sloppiness started at the first play of the game. You know, Derek Carr fumbles a snap, just bounced right off his chest, and the Chargers recovered it. And then I think two plays later, converted on touchdown. So, you know, it was definitely sloppy. Derek Carr kind of showed some of his youth in this game. A couple dump offs, including one David pointed this out when we were watching the game, but there was one where he sent a shovel pass to Darren McFadden, and I can't decide if Khalif Barnes got in the way or he just threw it right at his back, but you know, it hit him and just fell to the ground. And you know, there was another one that was kind of similar to that, and I had flashbacks to when Carr dumped the ball off to Barnes against the Broncos, and Malik Jackson forced fumble, Chris Harris recovered it, and then the Broncos ended up scoring a touchdown. So, you know, just a little sloppy play. I'm not sure who to blame that fumble on, but did not start the game off like they wanted to. And you know, and in addition to kind of sloppy play overall, there was a lot of penalties, especially on the Raiders side. You know, they had 8 penalties for 41 yards, and you know, even though the Chargers only got one first down off penalties, kind of seems like Phillip Rivers' best friend was the hard count. The Raiders' defensive line continually kept stepping off sides, and that really hurt them a lot in certain situations. But I guess maybe it didn't hurt too much because, only 13-6 that game. So I guess maybe the Chargers need to work on the converting on those mistakes. But yeah, so the Raiders definitely struggled with sloppiness, and the Raiders obviously kind of have some work to do. But, you know, the Chargers have been so dominant this weekend, but they looked a lot like the Raiders in this game.
Yeah, like you said, penalties. In fact, there's a lot of procedural penalties, little stupid things, jumping off sides, false starts, lots of 5-yarders, and just really dumb penalties to take. But the Chargers, you know, in addition to those penalties, they were sloppy just playing football. Phillip Rivers threw into triple coverage at one point. Miles Burris dropped an interception. This was kind of late in the first half, I think. Just a horrible throw, but no reason to throw it. Play like that, you know, he got away with it, but that's horrific. He also missed checkdowns, much like Carr did. He had 3 checkdowns he missed Brandon Oliver twice, and then he almost hit Donald Brown in the face on one play. It just looked sloppy. There wasn't communication going on. They also managed the clock poorly at the end of the first half. They ended up missing a 48-yard field goal after they didn't use 20 seconds when they still had a timeout to spare. Nick Novak hooked it wide. So, you know, that seemed like a missed opportunity. And they even had a messed up run play. Phillip Rivers went the wrong direction. You know, it almost turned into the butt fumble if Phillip Rivers had kept running. So it looked ugly out there. Part of what the ugliness could be accounted for, I suppose, would be that it seemed like both teams just kept having bad field position. Sounds counterintuitive because usually if one team has bad field position, the other has good. But the punters were really excellent in this game.
Yeah, definitely. You know, King had 2 punts inside the 20, including one that ended up on the 1-yard line. And, you know, he had 9 punts and averaged nearly 50 yards per effort. And the Chargers' average starting spot for the drives was on their own 31. And they would probably be backed up much further than that if it wasn't for a couple of drives that started around midfield. But the Raiders were definitely backed up as well.
Yeah, Mike Seifers, he's been a great punter for a long time. He had a lot of opportunities to pin the Raiders in this game, and he did that. He dropped punts inside the 15, inside the 10, a couple inside the 5. He dropped one at the 2-yard line, right in the corner. It bounced out of bounds at the 2. Really terrific. I mean, we're breaking down punting here. That tells you how bad the game was, but both punters really played well, and it showed in the field position.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, struggling with that field position obviously makes comebacks hard to come by. And, you know, the Raiders definitely had an opportunity to forge one on 3rd and 3 with less than 3 minutes left. Rivers threw downfield to Antonio Gates, and Charles Woodson and Brandon Ross jumped up with him for the ball, and Gates kind of bobbled it in the air, and you know, it was so close to being a pick, but Gates ended up making a great play and came down with the ball, and you know, but Ross definitely came really close to picking that ball off, and that absolutely would have changed the course of this game, because they would have been, I mean, where would they have been on, I don't recall where they were on the field.
It was about 2.5 minutes left in the game at that point. If the ball was incomplete, it'd be fourth down and the Chargers would have had to punt. If it's an interception, the Raiders start their drive with great field position. Either way, they're going to have 2.5 minutes to get a touchdown, and they still had 2 timeouts at the time. Instead, once the completion was made, Chargers were able to run the clock down further. 2 timeouts were used. By the time the Raiders got the ball back, it was just over a minute left, no timeouts, and they were starting from their own 12.
Yeah, and you know, things just didn't go quite well from there. Carr was sacked on that first play, and then on fourth down, he sent a 28-yard pass to James Jones, and so obviously got the first down, and then the Hail Mary pass, last play of the game, fell incomplete, so Raiders 0-10. And you know, there are a few positives to take away from this game for the Raiders, but there's definitely a few negatives. You know, Derek Carr was kind of the bright spot for these Raiders early on. You know, definitely was not playing like a rookie, but the past couple games kind of, he's not really quite as making as big of an impact as he had early on. You know, he was 18 of 34 for 172 yards, and he really only had 2 big plays. Both ended up setting up field goals, but you know, you got to make bigger plays than that. And you know, this offense has really struggled to get big chunks of yardage and moving downfield, you know, especially in the passing game. And then this run game, I mean, has just not gotten started at all. You know, 71 yards on 19 carries, and then 23 of those yards came on one play. And Darren McFadden and MJG are really struggling, and this is putting a lot of pressure on Carr, who's kind of fallen off from that hot start. The offense definitely struggled on third down, but the Chargers actually ended up struggling as well. You know, they were just 3 of 13 on third down, so that kept them off the field a lot, and then brought their defense on the field a lot. But you know, their defense was on the field for nearly 35 minutes of this game, and gotta hand it to them. I mean, it's pretty impressive that they held San Diego to just 300 total yards and 13 points, all things considered. And you know, I think that's something that they've really wanted to work on, is forcing turnovers, because in these close games, you know, they've had so many close games that have ended up being losses, and turnovers would obviously make a huge, they're difference makers in these kinds of close games, and I think they're still looking to start creating those more. You know, the Chargers got some momentum in the run game, but you know, they worked hard for every yard they got and averaged 3.8 yards per carry. But Antonio Smith and Khalil Mack both had sacks, and you know, it's that defense is definitely improving. The offense hasn't been very productive the past few weeks, but I think you know, I think these Raiders, there is some positives despite that record.
And for the Chargers, this is kind of almost a must-win game, I would have said. You know, sitting at 5-4, they were in danger of dropping out of that divisional race. They are 6-4 now, still a game back. But coming off a bye week, it seems like that might not have been the way you want to come out.
Sure. I mean, absolutely they needed to win this game, and they're still not in good divisional standing. But they did not look good in this game. Like you said, coming off a bye, playing a team that was 0-9, you're at home. You really would have hoped for more if you were a Chargers fan in this game, and it doesn't seem to be that promising moving forward. Phillip Rivers got hurt in this game. He was limping around a little bit. It looked like his knee was bothering him. We don't know if that'll be a factor moving forward, but he certainly didn't play well. He, like I said earlier, missed a lot of check down passes. He really just couldn't find the throws that we've seen him find earlier this year. We saw him against Seattle in week 2, and he carved him up. He carved up a great defense. This Oakland defense isn't very good, and for him not to carve them up like he should have is a warning sign. He was also diagnosed with a chest injury on the Chargers injury report. Kind of strange. Not sure what that means moving forward. It wasn't apparent in this game, but you definitely need to worry about Phillip Rivers. He was a legitimate MVP candidate early in the season, and he's really fallen from grace since then. So That's certainly one of the big negatives to take away from this game. You also have to worry that Jason Verrett, their rookie corner, who's played really well for them, he's actually on injured reserve now. They placed him there just after the game, I believe. He played against the Broncos on Thursday night. He tried to gut through a shoulder injury, and he left the game early, aggravated it, obviously, and now it's become so serious he can't play the rest of the year. So that'll be a problem moving forward in their pass coverage. So there were definitely a couple positives to take away if you're a Chargers fan. Ryan Matthews played for the first time since suffering an MCL sprain. I think he missed five or six games. Came back in this game and looked pretty good. Looked agile, still had some power, looked pretty quick. Those are all things that you are used to seeing from him. He's got a good blend of size and speed and quickness, and he certainly flashed in this game, avoiding guys in the backfield and getting up the field quickly. That said, Brandon Oliver still didn't look bad. Certainly there were some short runs where he got stuffed, but he's a pretty nice second or third back to have. So even missing Danny Woodhead for the year like they are, they have a pretty good group of backs now with Matthews healthy, Donald Brown, and Brandon Oliver. The other positive that I would say you could take from this game is that Keenan Allen looked more active than he has in a while. He caught 8 of 13 targets, only 63 yards, which isn't a ton, but they just missed on a couple big plays to him, a little bit, you know, just out of the fingertips. Couldn't quite bring it in on two plays in a row in the first half, including one down the field that was sort of a jump ball on a free play. He also looked good as a punt returner. He showed some shiftiness and picked up some yards. So good to see him playing better than he has so far this year in his second season. This week, they'll get the Rams at home. We know how tough of a team the Rams can be from what they did to the Broncos last week. If they can get pressure on Phillip Rivers, could be a long game for San Diego. We'll see how that one goes, but certainly San Diego needs to keep winning at this point to keep up in the division.
And naturally, this weekend's going to be another big, big weekend for this division. I was going to sit here and say that this upcoming game for the Broncos coming back home was going to be a must-win game because I kind of just assumed that the Chiefs would win against the Raiders. You know, for the Chiefs, who've won five straight, facing an 0-10 team, it kind of looked like they might just continue their winning ways. But the game just wrapped up minutes ago as I record this, and the Chiefs lost 24-20 in the black hole. And so as I speak, the Broncos have a half-game lead in the division over the Chiefs. Now, of course, this is still a very big game for the Broncos as they try to get back on track with a win at home against the Dolphins. But a win for the Broncos in that game would just go a little bit further to getting back to having that lead, controlling their own destiny in the divisional race. And of course, if the Broncos lose, that divisional race gets a little bit thicker. If the Chargers win, they'll all kind of be right there in the thick of it together. And that could be really interesting for this race as it goes down to the final weeks of the season. And with that, let's go ahead and look forward and take a bit of a preview at the Broncos versus Dolphins game coming up this weekend, Sunday in Denver.
There's certainly a sense of urgency when you lose a game. What we've talked about offensively this week is everybody focusing on doing their job better, and you hope that results in better offensive play. You know, so for me, you know, just focusing on my job, being a better quarterback, and then, you know, he's challenged every position to do something better, and you hope that results in better execution on Sunday. Doesn't guarantee it. Playing a really good team playing with a lot of confidence, but that's kind of all I've ever known to do, and that's what, you know, Adam has challenged us to do, is to you know, focus on your job and improving that, and you know, hopefully that'll result in better offensive play.
So now the Broncos come back home for their first game in about a month, but playing the Dolphins is no easy task, especially lately. They've won four out of their past five games, including the most recent one, a 22-9 win over Buffalo. And that one loss there is not a bad loss. A four-point loss to Detroit in Detroit. And if you want to go back even further a game, or they lost to Green Bay by 3 points, and Green Bay has been trending upward as well recently. So Miami's no rollover. Going on their defense side right now, they're number one in total defense per play, yards per play allowed, number one pass yards per play allowed, number 7 in rush yards per play allowed, and they're 10th in third down conversions allowed, or third down conversion rate allowed. Their offense, however, struggles a bit more, especially in their passing game. They're 28th overall in passing yards per play, and this comes despite Ryan Tannehill's best season as a pro yet. Highest completion percentage of any year he's had so far, lowest interception rate, highest touchdown rate. He's by far having the best season of his career to this point. Still, their offense is struggling a good amount, especially in the red zone. They are 30th in red zone conversion and last in goal-to-go conversion. However, their rushing offense is a lot better. They are 4th in rushing yards per play, even despite the season-ending injury to Knowshon Moreno. Looking at the defense, though, you look at that defense and you see maybe they could do some similar things that the Rams did to the Broncos last week. Would you agree?
I would agree. It's going to happen in a little bit different way, but certainly they have a very strong front line. Where the Rams kind of made things happen with a combination of inside and outside with Robert Quinn and Aaron Donald. You're going to see the Dolphins start more from the edge and work in. You have Cameron Wake. Everyone knows about him. One of the best stories of the last few years. Classic late bloomer, still an elite pass rusher. But Olivier Vernon has also, the last couple of years, emerged as a good complementary pass rusher to Cameron Wake on the other side. And more, they're starting to work in Deion Jordan, who was their first-round pick last year, who really, you know, he's suspended for the first few games of the year and has been a bit of a disappointment, but is starting to make some plays in the pass rush. So once again, the Broncos are going to be faced with a tough task trying to contain a fairly elite group of overall pass rushers and keeping them out of the backfield. Obviously, it helps that Peyton Manning more often than not is going to get rid of the ball in 2.5 seconds or less. That's his game, and that's really kind of what saved the offensive line at times this year. The other thing to consider, you know, you mentioned their overall defensive numbers. Very strong secondary right now. Brent Grimes is having another good season at cornerback. Rashad Jones at safety is having a very good year as well. Just a good balanced defense overall. Another guy to watch is Jelani Jenkins, particularly in pass coverage. He's one of the best pass coverage linebackers in the league right now, and whether it's Julius Thomas at tight end, depending on his health, or if it's Virgil Green or Jacob Tammy, it's going to be tough for them to get open when they're going up against a guy like Jenkins on the inside.
And especially tough with the injuries they have. I mean, if Emmanuel Sanders isn't back, Demaryius Thomas has been doing exceptional, you know, 7 straight 100-yard games, but to not have Emmanuel Sanders on the other side could be a bit of a tough blow, and Julius Thomas as well in the slot could be difficult facing this defense.
Mm-hmm. You're going to have to run the ball. I mean, we go back to what we talked about earlier in the St. Louis game, how the Broncos didn't really run it, but they're going to have to make a concerted attempt to either run the ball or as well, and actually I'm going to say this, not just run, but also, you know, continue getting the ball to C.J. Anderson on passes out of the backfield. He obviously didn't see much work in the running game relative to what you expected last week, but he did have 8 receptions. And, you know, if the Broncos can, you know, have another game like that with him in terms of catching the football, but then get him the ball 15 or 20 times on the ground, I mean, he could be the most important player for the offense in this game. It could be like the Raiders game all over again. And the best part about that, if you can get C.J. Anderson going, you can get the play action involved, and then also he's catching passes out of the backfield. You get the screen pass game involved again, and that can do more than anything to take a lot of the spice off the Dolphins' pass rush.
And speaking of pass rush, looking at the Broncos, though, however, it's been a bit of a tough month until that Rams game. You look at DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller. They hadn't combined for sacks from each of them in a while, at least like 3 or 4 weeks. Until this Rams game, they both get one apiece. Derek Wolfe gets one. And you kind of wonder if they can go back to having some of the similar success that they've had earlier this season, because they've really done well against mobile quarterbacks. And that might be, you know, more of a product of jumping out to leads and being able to just rush the passer on while they try and go through the air.
Well, it's also so that mobile quarterbacks tend to hold the football longer because they keep that run, that option to run alive. And Tannehill is taking advantage of that option to run. He's averaging 7.1 yards per carry this year. A big part of why the Dolphins' run game has been so effective is the threat of Tannehill, taking off with the football. So, but again, like you said, the Broncos have gotten sacks, have gotten pressure on quarterbacks when they do run. The other interesting thing with Tannehill compared to other mobile quarterbacks, usually mobile quarterbacks keep plays alive, and that opens up some deeper shots downfield. But the Dolphins' passing game, it's all underneath stuff, and it's all predicated around balance in terms of not having one target that you rely on. You've got five guys with at least 24 catches this year. You look game by game. It could be Mike Wallace, it could be Landry, it could be Charles Clay, a tight end that a lot of Broncos in the locker room really think highly of. It could be any of those guys, or even Brian Hartline, who lead the team in receptions and receiving yards on a given day. You just don't know. But what you do know is that Tannehill has learned to take what's there, and often that's the stuff that's underneath. So what that does, it puts some pressure on your linebackers and your safeties. They're going to watch Tannehill, but they've also got to maintain their responsibilities and coverage underneath.
And to kind of elaborate about their rushing offense, what is it they've done so well outside of Tannehill? Because, I mean, without your starting running back, to still be in the top five in the league in rushing offense, that's just really impressive.
Well, got to give credit to Lamar Miller. And they drafted him to be this kind of back. He was a disappointment before this point in his career. But, like a lot of guys, when they get a little bit more experience, the game starts to slow down, and he's looking like the guy that they drafted, that they expect him to be. If Lamar Miller had been this type of runner all along, they wouldn't have signed No'Shawn Moreno. There would have been no need for No'Shawn Moreno. But Miller was a disappointment before this year, so they bring in Moreno. Moreno had a great game in Week 1 against New England, and then got hurt. So, credit to Miller for stepping up, and that's why you want to be patient with guys who have talent, because sometimes the light bulb turns on a little bit later than others. And if they'd bailed on him too soon, I think they'd really regret that right now. So credit to him. And also, a rebuilt offensive line, obviously, in the wake of everything that happened last year, they had to pretty much tear down and rebuild that offensive line. They were getting a great season out of Brandon Albert, but now he's hurt, so they've had some changes. Now you got Juwan James, the rookie, working at left tackle, and it did not affect them against Buffalo. We'll see if that has an impact against the Broncos when Juwan James is going to face off with guys like DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller pretty often.
And looking at their passing offense, you mentioned they go underneath a lot. Does that kind of play the strengths of the Broncos? I mean, when we saw the Rams go deep early, that was something that really helped them. When we saw the Raiders really avoid that and go pretty much only underneath, that really hurt their chances.
Yeah, I mean, but that being said, it's not that they can't try it, and you do have a deep threat in Mike Wallace. It wouldn't surprise me if they try to stretch the Broncos' defense early, maybe take a deep shot that they've rarely done. But I mean, but where their bread is buttered is on the drags and crosses and the quick outs, and that's where they're going to make their damage. So the Broncos, really, their goal needs to be to keep the Miami targets in front of them and limit their yards after the catch.
How important is this game?
Massive. I think Terrence Knighton said it best. It's the most important game of the year. There's no question about it. This is the game where the entire season could turn, because you look at what lurks beyond this. Three road games in 4 weeks. All of those three road games are against playoff contenders: Kansas City, San Diego, Cincinnati. And the Broncos have struggled on the road. They're 2-3 on the road. Their two wins are against teams that are combined 2-18 in the Jets and the Raiders. If you lose this game, and given all the teams, you've got nine teams in the AFC that have three or four losses at this point. You lose this game, all of a sudden it becomes a very realistic possibility that this team could miss the playoffs if it can't fix what's wrong. This game is massive. And maybe when the season started, you didn't think it was going to be that way, but now it might be the most important game on the schedule.
As Jacob Tammy said on Wednesday, just a bunch of one-game seasons from here on out. Mm-hmm. And right now, game against the Dolphins is the most important season going ahead.
And the thing is, I think Miami will even tell you, for them, looking at what lurks beyond this game and also needing to establish their playoff position, I think it's the most important game of the season for them as well. So it's expect nothing less than a titanic showdown, I think, on Sunday at Sports Authority Field.
The game is at 2:25 Mountain Time. It'll be on CBS, so be sure to tune in or go to the game. Quick note, kind of funny connection between me and the Dolphins. I went to junior high school with their, I guess he's their third string safety, Walt Akins. He went to Alexander Graham, just an exceptional athlete. Went to Liberty. I think he transferred there after playing in Illinois for a little while. Hopefully we'll see him kind of grow in his position and be good for the Dolphins a little bit down the line. It'd be neat to see that for me, at least.
Yeah, fourth-round pick this year. To say the least, he's been used sparingly. I think he, according to ProFootballFocus.com, he has only 24 defensive snaps this year. But, you know, give him time.
Yeah, work your way up in special teams.
You know, he's got the measurables to do it. I think it's just a question now of whether, you know, of how well he learns the defense and how he adapts to the quickness of the NFL. But certainly, you look at his size, speed numbers, he can be an elite safety. We'll see what happens.
Yep. So with that, we are out. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget you can subscribe on iTunes. And with that, let's go to some quotes of the week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we still control our own destiny, and that's where we're at. And we know we have to improve and play better. And, I mean, this is a perfect game to be able to get back in the swing of things, get a win at home versus a talented Dolphins team that's in the hunt in the playoffs. And I mean, it's gonna be a good game. It's a tough challenge, and of course we're gonna be mad at losing to a game that we know we're supposed to win, but I mean, things like this happens in the league.
We just got to continue working hard at it, continue trying to create chemistry, because here's the thing, you don't just create chemistry at 2 weeks at the offensive line. It's not gonna be like that. Everything is not gonna be there. We understand we do need to get better, like I said. We understand that our team is relying on us for us to get better, and we will get better as an offensive line. We will be able to run the ball, and we will be able to pass pro. We will be able to protect Peyton Manning and do exactly what our coaches and this organization has asked us to do.
We just got to force some turnovers, man. We got to figure out a way to light a spark in the game. D-Ware forced one, and the ball just like landed right back in his lap. And that would have been a perfect opportunity, but we when the offense is struggling like that, we got to be able to get some type of spark, some type of turnover. Just to get back on track at home, that's always huge. We want to always protect our house. I think we're undefeated right now at home, and we want to keep it like that.